Welcome to Sharing the Middle, where we share the stories of the messy middles of our life. I am Lacey. Today's episode, we talked to Katrina Mitchum, Dr. Katrina Mitchum, about her experience with MS, higher education. You get to hear me nerd out a little bit. And yeah, Katrina is one of my people because higher education is in my career background, same with learning design and course creation. So it's so nice to talk to somebody who I have so much in common with. I just really appreciate her candidness, willingness to share as usual, and that we can laugh about some really dark things. Let's jump right in to our conversation. Welcome, Dr. Katrina Mitchum. I'm so excited to talk to you today because you probably don't know, but you are one of my people, and we'll talk more about that. But why don't you take a moment and introduce yourself to our listeners?
Yeah, I always struggle with what part of myself, right?
Yeah, I'm a little bit overview, blend professional, personal. Yeah.
Wife, mom, but also recovering academic and business owner and using all of those things to put good shit in the world. That's probably the best summary.
Tell me about recovering academics. My background is in higher education as well. I was on the staff side because I never wanted to get a PhD because I didn't want to do research. So I'm assuming with the doctor, that means you probably were on the faculty side.
Yes. But also admin. Yeah. Some of my favorite people are on the staff side. So makes a lot of sense why we get along.
Very loving people.
They have to be able to deal with a lot of the faculty.
It is a very unique environment that I don't think people who are not in higher education can truly understand. But what was your area of interest? What did you teach? What were you excited about? That kind of stuff.
So I got my master's degree in professional and technical writing because that's what I was going to do. And then I took a class on the teaching of writing. And I was like, I never, ever wanted to be a teacher, but I actually like this. And it was mostly because if you taught at certain places, you could access a population that has been underserved. And so my first 10, 12 years of teaching were at a community college. So the people who, for one reason or another, went back to school or didn't have access to a four-year institution at 18 and so went to a community college to get started, they wanted to freaking be there. And so I got into teaching writing because I wanted to break down barriers to that writing class is considered a gatekeeping class.
Is it to absolutely.
Keep people out that don't belong?
Well, and it also is, I know at least where I was, it's one of very few total general education. Everybody has to take English, 101, 1001, whatever. It's one of the only classes that you can make every single department take.
Yep. And so I wanted to be the person that helped people that needed it the most and didn't keep them from doing the other things just because they don't know how to use a freaking comma. You better believe they knew how to use the Oxford comma when they left my class. If you struggle with that, I always tell people I am the worst speller with a PhD in English that you will ever meet in your entire life. That's my Achilles heel. I was teaching in a community college before I even finished my master's because you could teach
18 credit
the
hours
entry of level. Yeah. That I hate the word basic writing. Honestly, people know what that means. You could teach that with a certain number of credit hours. And so I went to such a cool institution that they let me make that an internship.
That is really cool.
Yeah. So I got like the whole gamut of being observed and sitting down with a faculty member. And it was a really cool experience. And I'm really glad that I got to do that because I did actually really like it. But my spouse was in the Coast Guard. He just retired. And so we move every 2 to 3 years. I taught my first online class in 2009 and then did online only from 2010 all the way through. Got a PhD along the way. It was in rhetoric, writing, and digital studies.
Yeah.
Then I did admin. And then I left.
I will say, higher ed, I haven't been in higher ed since it's been 4 years. And from what I've observed from the outside, in those 4 years, it has been an insane amount of change. Like, it's a very different place to work than it was when I was there. From political changes, funding changes, all those different things. Like, it's almost like a 180 in how things run.
Yeah. Now, I do still adjunct because I can't help myself. And where I adjunct, I get to say no. Hey, it's not me like adjuncting and hustling to teach 11 classes at once.
Like a part-time salary.
And I do faculty coaching for them.
Okay, that's good. So before we jump into more, I do like to take a pause and ask people what they think of when they hear the middle. Some people have a strong reaction. I have a strong reaction. And so my solution was to make a whole podcast about it, which is about as crazy as you can be. But do you have a strong feeling or what comes to your mind?
The first thing that comes to mind for me is actually it's everything. Like, yeah, it's the middle between being born and being dead. That's where we are. We are in the middle at all times.
And how do you feel about
it? Sometimes it's messy and sometimes it's not. Mm-hmm. I feel good about it. Like, I'm glad I'm not at one end or the other.
That's true. I guess if you're looking at it on such a grand scale, there's nowhere else I'd rather be.
Nope.
Although I did just have a baby. And I got to be honest, if I could just nap all the day in a warm waterbed, I mean, that's essentially what you are as a fetus.
That's true. So, that is true.
But yeah, so you've got kind of that macro view. I do think it's interesting, too, now that we're talking about it and I'm thinking back to like my writing courses and that kind of stuff. The middle of like some of academic papers and all that kind of stuff is the stuff people don't read. When it comes to a lot of like writing in academia, people tend to skip the middle, right? Like, it's, you read the abstract, then you read the results, and you move along. And so,
So I'm going to jump off of that because sometimes the best stuff is in the middle, right? Yeah. Like, that's where you, what about this? And what about those methods? But did that really, can I see your data? Because
well, it can change the entire meaning.
Exactly. That's where you get the quotes. And so, to me, the middle is always the juiciest, perhaps best part, no matter how ugly it is.
Well, I usually invite people to share one particular messy middle for us to kind of use as an overarching conversation. What story would you like to share with us?
I thought about this because there are so many messies in my life. I'm going to share my diagnosis story because I was also finishing my PhD and still teaching part-time. And I had two babies at home and a husband on a boat. And so that was probably one of the messiest points in my life.
Like, I want to pause real quick right there. If people don't know, getting your PhD is essentially being told, hey, write a book. We don't really have stuff to tell you what to do, but we'll tell you what you do wrong. And we'll check in every once in a while about it, right? Okay, good luck, have fun. And then, so that's the teaching part-time. And so if I'd guess you're teaching what, like 9 credit hours, 3 courses at least?
Yeah.
So 3 different classes of teaching, 2 children, which is 2 full-time jobs right there, and not having support because your husband was away on a boat. I just wanted us to take a moment to ground how much stuff you just said so quickly, because I remember going in my first semester of grad school, I went to one of my professors and essentially was like, well, I'll be happy in 10 years when I have tenure and I have my PhD and I'm settled and that kind of stuff. In the meantime, you know, I'll just deal with having to do this. And my professor looked at me and she said, I think you should plan to be happy now.
That's fantastic advice.
She was on her way out. And so I think she had a much clearer view than those who are real deep in the research part of things. That's when I realized, oh, I don't want to do research because it is so, I didn't want to get a PhD. I like to dabble too much to just focus in on one topic for so long. I feel in my bones how much work that would be and how I don't want that. So I admire you for doing it.
It was one of those, I didn't realize how messy it had gotten. Right? And I think that sometimes when things are the messiest, at least for me, I've done better with the messy when I started paying attention to it getting messy. And that was literally almost as messy as I could potentially get.
Every single area of your life. Like, there is no...
Yeah. And my parents were halfway across the country. So it was literally just me. My second symptom, the symptom that made them think, ooh, we should probably do an MRI, was optic neuritis. And so I woke up one morning with a blind spot in my right eye. Nobody home, just me and the kids. We fortunately were going to kid meetups, right? Because they weren't in preschool or anything yet. And I called one of the moms and I was like, so I'm pretty sure I need to get my butt to an eye doctor. Could you sit with the kids for an hour and a half? And that wasn't even when I got diagnosed. I don't know if I've ever told you that I had, my thing is MS. And you have to have like different things happen over time. And then I was breastfeeding. So we didn't do an MRI till just a year later. Kind of a long road.
And yeah. Have you, what was your first symptom?
It was an itch that I couldn't scratch, but yeah, nonstop. Like it was probably 10 days. I thought I was going to go insane. And then it gradually became like numbness on my one side. And then my hand has some, still has some loss of sensation, that kind of thing. It didn't go away. The numbness is still there, but the itch went away and it stopped. And I was like, oh, that was weird. And if I hadn't been like with all of these other things, I would like to think I would have paid closer attention to that. My primary thought, because I lived in Minnesota, so it was icy. I had a 15-pound, 3-month-old with an arm in the carrier, like jerked something when I slipped on ice. And so everybody thought it was orthopedic, which wasn't. But yeah, I would hope looking back, I would have pushed a little more. And it's sad that we have to do that, that like people just try to chalk it up to something that they know, even though the numbness in my hand, that's a weird symptom for shoulder injury. But that's why like sharing this, I think, is important, because paying attention to when things are getting messy can help, I think, in the long run.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. For me, I just attributed everything to anxiety, right? Because that's what society tells us, is all this stuff's in our head. And I remember talking with my boss or coworker at the time, and I'm like, I've had anxiety for a long time, but it's so physical. I've never had this before. And I had a panic attack once when we were at an event. And looking back now, I'm like, oh, that was sensory overload because of my ME/CFS that now I can recognize it. At the time, I just thought it was anxiety. And so it's so easy to self-diagnose. It's so easy to minimize. And so, yeah, no, I totally, as you said, I would like to think, I'm like, no, I would have thought the same thing.
But to be fair, in 2022, I had a relapse and didn't realize that I was having a relapse. Part of the reason why I left, right? So I had stepped into a director position. I'd done that during the pandemic because I was one of two people that really knew online teaching and learning. And so a lot of faculty, a lot of students, I was working a ridiculous number of hours. And so 2022, my supervisor went on sabbatical and it was a really rough semester. And upper administration was throwing all of these new programs they wanted developed. And I was losing words, like common words. And for someone that lives and breathes words, that should have been a clue. But everybody said, it's just stress. You're under a lot of stress.
Losing words. So one of the things that I tried to do is to describe to my husband with my brain fog, what I tell him, I was like, I need you to imagine that your brain has become a cotton and you can see shadows and stuff places and you know what you need on the other side. But you've got to get through all of that stuff. And it just feels so full. That's what it feels like for me when I have brain fog. So when you say you lost words, how would you describe that?
Not that way, but I do get that way. Yeah. And so when I've lost a word, it's more like I'm flipping through the file and the file's fucking missing, Lacey. It's not there. It's not where I last put that file.
So it's not like a foggy thing that you're like, I know something's there, dude.
Yeah.
There's an empty spot.
It's like there is a word for this, and it's not this word because that word is there, and it's not that word because that word is there, but it's like something in between those words, but it's the perfect word for this. And it wasn't even like highly academic words. It was words like door, like simple things that you don't lose the word door when you learned it in your first 3 or 4 years of life.
I couldn't think of the word for sawhorse earlier today because we went and bought a saw. It's a whole thing. And my husband, I said, you know, the things that you put up, that you put something on top. And he looked at me and he said, go on. And I was like, no. I don't remember the word. And I don't feel guilty about not remembering sawhorse. If I couldn't remember door, I would be concerned.
Yeah. And I brought it up to my neurologist and they said they thought it was stress. Even though I had also fallen in that same semester. And so mobility things like walking, I've got foot drop. And so sometimes walking, it just happens. But that was the first time I'd fallen. And so I went on FMLA, did part-time. And I had my scans that following December, we found new lesions. And so all of those things that I had been told were stressed wasn't just stress. It was an active relapse. And
the experts do.
That's the thing. And really are not experts in MS. And that is part of the problem. Honestly, we just moved in March. And I am now, for the first time since I was diagnosed in 2016, at a place where I have an MS specialist. And she's telling me all these things like, have you ever seen? And I'm like, I didn't know that was a thing. It just goes to show, I think, that while like I would hope that I would see what the messy middle is, sometimes you don't know what the mess is until you're through it. Other people are telling you what they think it is.
Are you tired of scrambling to track your baby's daily routines? Meet Cubtail, the smart parenting assistant that revolutionizes how you monitor your little one's needs. With Cubtail's innovative tracking buttons and easy-to-use app, you can effortlessly log feedings, diaper changes, and sleep patterns with just one click. No more fumbling with your phone at 3 a.m. Join thousands of parents who've discovered the peace of mind that comes with Cubtail. Visit www.cubtail.com/laceyshares
and use our link
to start your parenting journey with less stress and more joy. Cubtail, making parenting simpler, one click at a time.
You hear me talk a lot about my chronic illness here on Sharing the Middle and on No Shame in the Home Game. Hydration is one of the biggest things that I can do to help take care of myself. And really, this is true for anyone. There are a lot of hydration options out there, but there is one that I know that supports others with chronic illness, and that's Buoy. They have drops for hydration, different types of hydration depending on your needs. Also, some other things like mental clarity and tummy troubles. They also have a salt that you can put in things to help with your hydration. And I put mine in my coffee every morning and it helps make it taste even better. I was able to get an affiliate link with Buoy, which if you remember, affiliate links are good for me and you and the company, that if you want to buy it, if you use our link at joyfulsupportmovement.com/Buoy, which is B-U-O-Y. By the way, do I say that weird? I don't know. They'll know that we sent you. You can help support Sharing the Middle and the Joyful Support Movement by using our link while supporting your own hydration and other people with chronic illness. So it's wins all around. I hope you check it out and like it just as much as me.
Well, I want to go back a little bit to, we're thinking about your first instance, not the flare we were talking about. So you have all these different things going on and things are very messy. Did you know, like, did you feel like it was messy, or were you just in such survival mode that it was, I guess what I'm asking is, when did you realize it was messy? Was it when you went to the eye doctor that time? Was there any other places that you recognized the mess?
It was definitely after the fact. I did not realize how messy it was until I think the first time I said all of those things out loud together. In a sentence, like hearing is what made me realize, oh shit, that was a lot. I was just in survival mode. I was just taking things literally one day, sometimes 15 minutes at a time. That's how I got through my dissertation. I wrote my dissertation in 15 minutes a day, and I just created systems to support me in ways that I didn't have people to support me.
What was the topic of your dissertation?
It was retention in online writing classes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which probably explains to you a lot of why I do what I do now.
Yeah. Now I'm like, well, tell me your methodology. Like, wait, this is where, like, I love the concept of academia and dipping my toe in it, but I don't want to live there.
I love the research part. And so, like, doing market research in business, I'm like, oh, yes, I do love that. I love a good spreadsheet. I tend to be a mixed methods gal myself because numbers can lie.
Also, and they only tell so much.
Some of the best is to learn about people is through the ways they talk about themselves or the things mm-hmm. they're doing. And so trying to find the themes and patterns in those things is a lot of fun to me. And then when I can back that up with numbers, that's good stuff.
Thank you for indulging. Yeah. I have two master's degrees. I have one in communication and one in instructional design and technology. They're about 6 years apart. And so we're getting to the place where I was, where I'm like, I need to learn something. And so I'm starting to realize now, tell me your method. It's starting to bubble up again. I do not need a third master's degree. I do not.
You do not.
But I will say, I had tuition remission. That's part of the reason why I got a second master's degree. It's a very beautiful thing. Anyway, one of the things that this podcast is built around is the idea that by sharing your story, you make a lot of meaning. And that, like, you, by just articulating story, you make meaning within yourself. And then by sharing your story, other people can make meaning of theirs and all these different things. So glad to hear that that worked for you.
I am proof that Lacey's methods work.
I would love to hear more about your diagnosis. I have a lot of strong feelings about getting a diagnosis and what that actually means. But I think I have such a more nebulous condition, whereas I feel like MS is a much more like, this is what's happening. We know things. I feel like we've also seen a lot about MS in culture recently with Christine Applegate and Selma Blair. So I would love to hear your diagnosis story and how you felt about
it. I feel like I got lucky that I had someone that just looked at the timing of my symptoms, because separate is one of the key pieces, right? Because there are other things that can mimic lesions and all. And so while like the time between my symptoms and the MRI was a long period of time, I think in retrospect, that was probably good because there was time between each start of new stuff. And then it all showed up in the MRI. And so in some way, I didn't have to keep going back to the doctor every time something was happening because we were just waiting to do the MRI. So it took some of that stress out. Mm-hmm. Hindsight is always 20/20. And I definitely had symptoms when I was pregnant with my first. Different things that I've mentioned were happening. Like I had eye pain every time I moved my eye. And that is a first symptom of optic neuritis. I was just living in a different place. So with my second, we were in Minnesota. I had a vitamin D deficiency. With my first, I lived in Hawaii and I probably had too much vitamin D. And those kinds of things can make all the difference in how your body responds to situations.
Also, and pregnancy is the wild, wild west of medical things. No one knows it. You could say anything. They'd be like, yeah, that's probably pregnancy. Thanks.
One of the symptoms was, so there's this thing where if you bend your neck forward, you get like a zing down your spine and into your feet. I had that. They were like, oh, you're 8.5 months pregnant. And the baby's probably sitting on something. I'd never been pregnant before. I had no idea. So yeah, hindsight is definitely 20/20. But I didn't know to be worried about it then that first time because things went away. Like I didn't get zinging anymore and all that kind of stuff. So
how do you keep track? Because it sounds like so many different one-off things, right? Like, did you answer a questionnaire? Like, I just feel like some of these things are so, you know, in different ways that it's hard to recognize because you're just a person living your life.
Yeah. So I think that if optic neuritis hadn't been one of my symptoms, my diagnosis would have taken longer, honestly, because the ophthalmologist was like, have you ever been diagnosed with MS? And I was like, no. Why? So that was the trigger symptom because it is common. And that's the thing with MS. No two people have the same symptoms. No two people have the same experience, but optic neuritis is usually one of the few telltale signs. So in some ways, it was the symptom that made it an easier diagnosis process. I didn't have to fight anybody, which I have heard horror stories. I also have celiac, and it was another situation where I got lucky. So I went with stomach pain and my primary thought I was being beat at home and sent me for x-rays to make sure I didn't have a broken rib. So there were several tests that they sent me for before they sent me to a gastroenterologist. I happened to have a gastroenterologist that still kept up on the research. This was back in 2006.
Then very new.
I wasn't a fad yet to go gluten-free. Yeah. Like it wasn't a diet thing. Hadn't heard of it. My insurance company denied seeing a nutritionist because it was that weird to be diagnosed with celiac back then in the U.S. I got lucky that he kept up on the research.
Do you feel like your diagnoses led you to solutions?
Gluten-free is just, I don't have to take a pill for that. There's no physical therapy. It's just don't eat out. I mean, I went on disease modifying treatments, right? That's what they do for MS. Should they have put me on physical therapy then? Probably, because the sooner you can get those things functioning as well as they can, I feel like the better off when you do have relapses. Oh, I'm hoping with this new move and this new neurologist, there are like, I didn't even know that neurophysical therapy was a thing. I didn't know
to me
that speech therapy, neuro-speech therapy could help with my words. So sometimes it's forgetting words, but if I, so when I get hot, I'm like a drunk person. I slur, I fall, I get confused, I don't know where I am. And this new neurologist told me that a neuro-speech therapist could actually help with the finding of the words and the not slurring when I get overheated. Who knew?
Apparently,
the people that do the research know.
Yeah. So looking back, so we kind of talked about the beginning of the mess in the middle. Do you have a point that you're like, oh, because I know we talked about everything's the middle, but was the, when we're thinking about this particular experience, was there an end point? Was it graduation or your partner coming back home? What, do you have an end for it?
Probably when I left higher ed.
Okay.
I'm not going to lie. That's probably when it ended. Because I think, you know, a lot of it, stress was not the cause of my issues. Sometimes, like, the messiness, right, is actually the feeling of stress. That's why it feels messy.
Yeah.
And so I really didn't have a reduction of that until, unfortunately, until I left. Doing great now.
Sorry, that's funny. Well, I will say I can relate to what you were saying. One of the things that has taken me a long time to internally understand, but also to articulate to other people is the stress is not the cause, but the stress can exacerbate the environment to make the cause enact. You know what I mean? And so, yes, one of the biggest changes in my life is I had to stop working in the same way. And I've had to monitor my stress. And that has made a huge difference. But the stress wasn't the cause. It just was a platform for it to occur. And people have a really hard time understanding.
Yeah, no, but that is a perfect way to describe it. It's almost like a trigger, right?
Yes.
As opposed to being the cause, it's a catalyst.
Is there anything else you would want to say, like about your middle, about your experience or anything like that before we move on to your advice?
No, I think that's really that was the messy part. That was the, there's probably more details that I don't remember because I've got lesions on my brain.
I also love that people with chronic illness can have such a dark sense of humor. But I love it so much.
My advice.
Oh, there we go.
If I didn't laugh through these things, I would be in a ball of tears in the corner, like the baby, right? Like I would want to be at the beginning. It's a lot. Like if you really sit down and think about what the hell is going on in your body and what your trajectory could be, like, I don't want to think about that. So that makes me more mindful of where I am and how much I like to laugh and joke around, be a little dark, because if I'm not laughing at it, it will laugh at me. That's how I feel. And just making sure that you find support. And that's something I didn't get early enough in my diagnosis. So like when I moved from Minnesota, I did eventually have like people around me, but none of them had experience with MS. None of them, like I couldn't say the medication that I was on and have them be like, oh yeah, I was on that. How are you dealing with this side effect?
Yeah.
Or do you even have that side effect? Little things that where you don't have to say much for another person to completely and totally understand your situation. Lacey, you and I have said about higher ed because we were in it, right? Yeah. Like somebody listening to this might not really get.
Yeah.
And so making sure no matter what your messy middle is, meaning the people that you can talk to, that you can say it in less words and they just immediately grok what it is you're feeling, what it is you're dealing with, because that was a game changer for me.
Yeah. And sometimes one of the ways that I see that in my world, I should say, is I pass out a lot. It's just a thing that happens. We've figured out it in life. But it's a joke, a thing we joke about. And it's also a thing we don't worry about. So like passed out while I was giving birth. I was getting a C-section and I passed out during it. And the anesthesiologist is freaking out. And my husband's like, oh, no, this is a normal one. You're fine. Just keep going. And it's just like, let's see. Like, if you can bring her back, she'll be fine. This is our normal state. If anybody outside of that context didn't know that, he would seem very uncaring. And so just having people to understand that context, to be able to get the humor and that kind of stuff. Yeah, I cannot stress enough how important that is.
And sometimes when you can't laugh at it, right? So for me, when I get overheated and I can't even string sentences, like I can't string words together because I can't find enough of them. I can just say words And my husband and my kids know what that means. They need to just stop asking me questions because I'm going to get to the point where I don't even understand your questions if you keep going this way.
Your having kids?
They're 10 and 12.
Okay. My kids are 6 and 4 in like 6 months, but they don't get the mommy needs you to stop talking to me right now. So it's nice to know that that's coming.
It will.
It doesn't mean that I don't love you. It doesn't mean that I don't want to hear what you're saying. But I can't engage with you the way that I know we both want to.
Yeah. And that's a whole other conversation, right? Like explaining things in a way that doesn't scare them. How do you do that? You do it very carefully, giving as minimal amount of information as humanly possible. But yeah, that would be a whole other episode, Lacey.
Well, tell people about what you're doing now and how they can find you and all that stuff.
Yeah. So I took all that stuff we talked about earlier and I just switched industries. Now I help small businesses create courses like they give a shit about their clients' outcome. All that instructional design background wasn't just for nothing. When I decided to get out, I took a course and it was garbage. And I haven't talked to a single person that didn't have that experience. And I founded Katrina Mitchum Learning Design and I am on a mission to fix that.
Yes, preach. That's why whenever we've made courses in our Joyful Support Movements about home management, I just need you guys to know that I have different modalities on purpose. It's actually structured in a very specific way that we thought about scaffolding. There are activities to reinforce your, you know, all these different things. I'm not just going to hand you a PDF or just a copy of a webinar. This is not a course.
Don't get me started.
So you're preaching to the choir here.
Yes. You can find me actively on LinkedIn. I'm pretty sure I'm the only Katrina with a C Mitchum on there. So that makes it easy. Yeah. And I have a YouTube channel.
I'm going to go look. Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing the middle with me today. It's always, it's one of those things where it's great to talk to somebody else who has chronic illness, but it's also like, I'm sorry.
Yeah, totally and completely agree. I'm glad I get to come on here and Lacey just knows we don't even have the same chronic illness. We don't have to. We just get it. But also just, I'm sorry too.
Thanks. We're making life work, aren't we? Awesome. Well, thank you so much again for sharing the middle with me today.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for sharing the middle with me today. I hope our conversation resonated with you wherever you are in your own messy middle. Make sure to visit us at sharingthemiddle.com to find show notes, resources, and other information about today's episode. And you can always submit your own middle story for a future episode through the website. Your voice matters and we want to hear it. Make sure to connect with us on social media at Joyful Support Movement or me at Lacey Shares to continue the conversation. You can always support the show by leaving a review, sharing with a friend, or joining the Joyful Support Village. And remember, the middle can feel a little less messy when we share it together.